time for a sofa upgrade? Introducing Anabe Sofas, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices. Every Anabe sofa is modular, allowing you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabe is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquids simply slide right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink and feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today. Sofas start at just $699 with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get early access to Black Friday now. The biggest sale of the year can save you up to 60% off, plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Well, good evening and happy Easter. Thank you very much for tuning in to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We appreciate you being here with us. And Tim, happy Easter.
Thanks. It was probably the wrong day to go rabbit hunting, but
I happened
to get one with eggs, so well, it was a bonus.
We've got an interesting show tonight. We're going to talk about the Bible and the paranormal, and also UFOs and advanced technology in the Bible. And maybe we can even talk to our guest and find out, you know, where exactly a rabbit and colored eggs come into play with the birth of Jesus Christ or the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Either way, maybe there's a correlation we're unfamiliar with, Tim.
I know how black jelly beans fit in my Easter basket. I was always told if I got the black jelly beans that I wasn't particularly good that year.
Really? Those are my dad's favorites.
Because the Easter bunny supposedly in my basket.
Nice. That's not good. Yeah. Not good at all. Before we get started into tonight's show, as we like to do, if you have announcements about events that you have coming up, you can give us a call. Let us know about them. We'll put you on the show and give you a chance to talk about it. We've got a good friend of ours from the Chicago Paranormal Research Society out in Chicago, Illinois, Mike Ganster, also known as The Coach. And Mr. Ganster is with us to talk to us a little bit about a MUFON event that's coming up. And welcome to the show, Mike.
Yeah, hi, Dave. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much for sharing your time with us. Okay, go ahead. Tell us what's going on.
Well, as you know, I'm also Assistant State Director for Illinois MUFON.
That's right.
And Saturday, March 29th, from 8 till 5, the Chicago Tinley Park Convention Center, which is at I-80 and Harlem Avenue in Tinley Park, we're hosting a mini-symposium with three guest speakers, probably most of which you've heard of already, Dr. Mark Roniger, and Don Schmidt, and Sam Maranto.
Oh, great.
We'll be three keynote speakers there.
And this is open to the public? Anybody can go, or do you have to be a member of MUFON?
Oh, no. Anybody can go. What we'd like you to do is go to IllinoisMUFON.com. You can learn more about the symposium there and purchase your tickets online. And it'll save you $5 from purchasing at the door as well.
Excellent. And again, MUFON stands for the Mutual UFO Network, correct?
Yes.
And tell us, for the people that aren't familiar with it, tell a little bit about MUFON and what you guys do so that they understand, and if they're interested in you know, following up on this, they can look it up as well.
Well, there's MUFON International, which if you've heard of MUFON at all, that's usually what you think of. And each state has their own section, and Illinois MUFON has, we've just become a not-for-profit organization, and putting on our own functions as well as in conjunction with the international. What we do is, well, basically investigate reports and sightings of UFOs.
Have there been a big pickup over the last couple of years here?
Well, in fact, where we're having this symposium in Tinley Park was the sighting, the location of a couple of very good sightings. The last one was 2006, and there is quite a bit of video footage on that one. The triangles that have been seen in the last few years, particularly most of the Illinois sightings seem to be the triangles nowadays.
Now, wasn't that also the site, Tinley Park, wasn't that where the police officers from like three or four different jurisdictions were following along this huge flying building, almost, they were calling it. It looked like a building zipping through the sky, and they picked it up.
I believe that was the Southern Illinois, I believe, Dave. Wasn't that down closer to St. Louis, I believe?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought I remembered it being something to do with Tinley Park.
No, Tinley Park, it was around the same time, which is may lead to the confusion.
Okay.
But we have several individuals who videotaped this these lights, or we tend to call it the triangle-shaped craft. So, okay. And a lot of that footage will be shown at the symposium as well.
Now,
also,
how about this, Mike? I'm just curious. Maybe you could fill us in. Has there been any more follow-up, any more information on the O'Hare Field UFO, the UFO that was seen last year?
Yeah, Sam Maranto, who's my director, he's the Illinois State Director, and he's the one that's been really working on that. So I don't know that many inroads have been made, and we keep following leads who say someone has some tape or photos, and then that kind of leads to a dead end. Most of the time,
right.
So it's an ongoing project. The O'Hare.
Now,
sighting.
Is this something for people that have an active interest in UFOs? Even if they haven't had experiences, they can come share. Do they learn how to deal with the experiences if they've seen it? Is there a kind of a MUFON support group for people that have seen UFOs or have been abducted?
Well, yeah, I'll say yes, because one of the active members that we have, who's an investigator, is also an abductee in the past, and he's more than willing to discuss that with anyone else who thinks they may have been abducted. We have a member who's a clinical psychologist who is willing to talk to them as well, and
Great. We
have several outlets for people with from any range of sightings to what they may have encountered. We can try and deal with it.
All right. Now, again, the conference is coming up when?
Saturday, March 29th. Registration is at 8 a.m. until about 9, and it goes till approximately 5 p.m. It'll end with a speaker question and answer session, so people that have questions will be able to air those.
All right, great.
And for anyone coming from any kind of distance, the Holiday Inn Select is right there at I-80 and Harlem Avenue in Tinley Park, so there's a place to stay. And like I say, if they just go to IllinoisMUFON.com and learn more about it, and also become a member of Illinois MUFON at the same time if they wish.
Great. So again, it's Illinois MUFON, that's MUFON, IllinoisMUFON.com, to get all the information for the event coming up on the 29th in Tinley Park, Illinois. I'd highly suggest, if you're into the ufology and into stargazing and checking all this stuff out, check them out. MUFON's a great organization. They're definitely respected people in the field. It's not just a bunch of goofballs claiming to see stuff. These are learned people from all over the entire world that have gathered together to create this network. And this is a great opportunity to meet out there in the Illinois area for all of you in the Midwest and Central area to get together and hear some stories, share some stories, and get some help and ideas on how you can also become a field representative for MUFON, correct?
That's exactly right.
Great.
Also, Dave, this is kind of a dry run for, we're hosting the 2009 International at the same location as well. So this is a little bit of a practice run for us, too.
Great.
This year's will be in San Jose, California, but the following year will be right here in Tinley Park.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mike. Hopefully we'll have a good turnout for you. And again, for anybody that's interested, you can go ahead and go to IllinoisMUFON.com. That's Illinois, MUFON. com to get more information regarding that. Now we're going to go to our guest for the evening. you know, I was joking around with Tim. I said, Tim, you know what we got to do is we got to find a good story that has something to do with the Bible. Since it is Easter, we should deal with the Bible and some kind of religious aspects. Mm-hmm. And Tim, being the good producer he is, struck out and found a gentleman who's got some amazing articles published, and he brought to me Patrick Cook, who is our guest for this evening. So let's take a few moments here and welcome to the Darkness on the Edge of Town, Mr. Patrick Cook. Good evening, sir.
Thank you very much for having you on your show. I really appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you spending your Easter evening here with us this evening and sharing some stories and information. Your website's fascinating. For people that are interested in checking it out during the show, you can go to BibleUFO.com. And then you also have the website doctrinesofmen.com. But definitely check those out. You can see some of the articles, see some of the things we're going to be talking about tonight during the show. And I was really interested in the article that you had up that you posted, I believe, as of July 2007, entitled The Bible and the Paranormal, A New Perspective. And that's what I would like to start off this first hour with, is talking a little bit about the Bible and the paranormal. And where does it fit in together? Now, you're a theologian, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and
I'm an autonomous theologian, meaning right. that I don't have any connection to any organized religion.
So
I have freedom to study in a different way than a normal, dogmatically directed theologian would. So I've been able to discover some amazing things from that standpoint.
Well, you know, this is something that I always thought was pretty amazing. I love the Discovery Channel and History Channel, and I watch a lot of shows there on the Bible and Bible prophecies and religious aspects of the paranormal. And one of the things I thought was really interesting in doing what you do, I'm sure you've probably seen this, is that the story of Noah and the Ark transcends Christianity. It's seen in religions all across the world, the story of the Great Flood and the Ark.
Well, there are 400, at my last count, there were 438 Noahs around the world.
Wow.
And they all speak of a flood. They all speak of a particular person who was separated from the rest of the people to carry on the race afterwards. And the one thing that's important to consider here is that the Bible is a very Hebrew-centric document, or a group of documents, all centered around the nation of Israel. And so it's very short-sighted for us to consider that a God, supposedly, who created the entire world and all the things and all the people on it, would only focus on a very small section, and that would be the only people he would talk to, the only places he would spend his time.
Right.
So it makes sense that these stories, this continuity we find in religion, I'm also a comparative theologian, expresses itself. If this is truly a world-ruling type of entity, or a world-controlling type of entity, supposedly creating the world, obviously, then we would see similarities in a lot of the religions around the world, which is exactly what we see. And it's absolutely fascinating. Noah is only one of those aspects.
Well, now, maybe you could tell us, too. We had a friend of ours, Wayne Herschel, who wrote a book called The Hidden Records, who was on our show about 2 years ago. And one of the things he was talking to me about the Bible that I thought was very interesting, because I'd questioned him. He was going into some of the Bible studies, and I said, you know, being a scientist, being religious, how do you reconcile the fact that, there's no mention of dinosaurs in the Bible? And he actually clarified that. I guess in the original writings, on the day that the Bible, as we know it, talks about the day that the birds were created, the actual word wasn't birds. The actual words was like large lizards or great lizards. And he talks about the fact that the Bible did, in fact, make a brief mention of dinosaurs and that. I mean, have you found that during any of your studies, or is this just another person telling us something?
Well, actually, it would stand to reason that, the Christian community has some very strange answers for the dinosaurs. One of them is that it's a satanic deception.
Right.
and buried all these bones to move everybody toward evolution. Which is in itself, a pretty ridiculous concept. But in all sincerity, if you look at the first verse of the Bible, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and the darkness was upon the face of the deep. Well, breaking that down as a theologian into the original Hebrew words that was written in, we actually see that what we're talking about, and remember specifically that the waters brooded, the Spirit of God brooded over the face of the waters. And this is before before everything, the whole concept began to happen. what if you we have a section on creation on the website, and what it actually shows is that there's a very strong possibility that what this creation or this biosphere we now live in may not and probably was not. Obviously, there had to be a completely different biosphere to accommodate the dinosaurs. And there's even transitions, as you see in the Ica stones and various other representations of what seem to be humans interacting with dinosaurs. What the strong possibility was, if you look in Jeremiah, there's we go very deeply into the possibility that this is actually at least a second, if not a one of multiple creations that happened on the planet. It speaks of cities before the creation. It speaks of birds flying in the air before the creation in Jeremiah. So I think there's a strong possibility that this is in fact one of perhaps many creations, or at least two, because we know that Jeremiah speaks of a creation before this, and that, you know, it's very detailed. You'll have to go to the website to check it out, but it's very clearly detailed in there. So yeah, I agree. I agree that that this is like the words tohu and bohu that make up the major words in the concept of the beginning of the creation actually shows that that there was a creation, a destruction, and a recreation. And just look up the words T-O-H-U and B-O-H-U on any in any search engine, and you'll find out how that concept comes true with just those few words. As a matter of fact, the entire beginning of this biosphere that we know it has been completely misrepresented in a number of ways by, and I believe, anthropology and the church itself.
Now, so you're saying that God actually created the earth, kind of wiped it clean, and recreated the earth again, and that might explain the dinosaur theory and the balance of humans and dinosaurs coexisting?
Well, let's look at a very interesting phenomenon around the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Monoliths and megaliths all over the place.
Right.
Huge, giant pyramids all over the place that seem to have no place in any civilized structure. The pyramids were there when Herodotus discovered or wrote about it, which is one of our earliest writings, and he was the one that attributed it to Khufu in the 2700 B.C., but he talked to priests that said that structure had been there for 11,000 years,
nice.
Which is absolutely fascinating.
Right.
And you notice that these pyramids seem to be covered. The Great Pyramid is definitely has salt marks up to about two-thirds of the way up into the pyramid itself.
Right.
So there's a very good possibility that those incredible structures and the Uparts that we see around the planet, you're familiar with Uparts, I presume.
Right.
Okay, the Uparts, the out-of-place artifacts,
uh-huh.
The archaeology that we see may have been part of a greater civilization that predated our own existence, our current existence in this biosphere. So there's another that in itself, you know, shows that there's a possibility that that entire civilization was destroyed. So there's a very strong possibility that the very evidence that we have around the world proves that there was more than one biosphere here.
Now, do you believe, as I've heard some of the people now that are starting to stretch into the theories of, and I know we're going to get more into the UFO and advanced technology in the second hour, but do you believe any of the thought that maybe we weren't actually created here? We're the extraterrestrials on this planet.
It's fascinating. I was just talking to somebody about that today. I am a researcher. I try not to put my own opinions into the work itself. I use scriptural references. Basically, I use the King James Bible. And, of course, I do refer to other religions in the similarities that they present with the Bible. But my opinion is that it actually did happen on this planet, but not in the way that we think it did. I believe that there was a creation of mankind and then a separate creation of an individual called Adam in a garden, separate from the rest of humanity. And I believe that there's a very important purpose for that creation, which is very clearly laid out in the Bible and documented on my website under the Incredible Gospel of Jesus, which shows a whole different parallel to a whole different concept to what the church teaches about our destiny as human beings. So I actually believe that it did happen on the planet, but I believe that in the sense, see now, if you look at the if you look in the Bible, the two main quote unquote divine entities that you hear of are the gods and angels. Now, there's a very strong possibility that those angels themselves, the gods, are described in certain ways as being very, very odd-looking individuals, but the angels are never described, and there's a very strong possibility that there is an extraterrestrial origin to the angels themselves. God, I don't believe, has... The gods themselves do not have a planetary existence. I do not believe they live on another planet somewhere. But that they are actually that their existence is in space itself. So, from the standpoint of us, when you think about that, this God created, supposedly created the planet, and then redid the biosphere and put us on it. Well, actually, technically, since he is not of this planet, we would be of extraterrestrial origin.
Sure.
But the nature of those extraterrestrials that changes the entire concept. I believe that what we're seeing, that naturally, if I'm going to say that there's a Bible UFO connection and the possibility that God drives a flying saucer, as it were, I must necessarily consider the possibility. Any other beings associated with those UFOs also must have some relationship to those gods. So, what I believe is that if you look in the Bible, and I've got I've written extensively on angels on the website, you will see that angels are never really described in the Bible. As a matter of fact, the only time the physical size of an angel is ever described is when Peter went into the tomb after Jesus was resurrected, and he described the being as an angel, but had the appearance of a young man, of a child, of an adolescent, basically, is what it meant. He was short. So, and when you consider that they say when they're talking about angels, they say they have the appearance of a man, which could mean anything. It could mean they have arms and legs and a head. Well, if any of the angels, any of the aliens, quote unquote, that we see, well, they've got arms, legs, and a head, but they're never really described in the Bible. So there's a very strong possibility. And what I certainly believe is that the angels that are described as serving the gods are actually a possible collection of many alien races that are serving in a federation similar to what Star Wars was like, serving the Force, which was the god symbol of Star Wars. So,
well, we have to take our first break here. Just stick with us, Mr. Cook. We'll be right back. You're listening to Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio, bringing you into the light. We'll be back with more right after this.
Adopting aliens and giving them good homes since 1953. Just don't tell our landlord.
Easy, phone home.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
It's Dave and Tim shacking up in the darkness on the edge of town. When Dave was a young boy, he once awoke to find himself staring directly into the eyes of a shadow person. Turns out it was just his life-size cardboard cutout of Donny Osmond.
Go away and go. Go away and go.
Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town.
And welcome back to the show. Our guest this evening is Patrick Cook. We're going to be talking to him for the next 2 hours, and we're going to be discussing everything from the paranormal in the Bible to flying vehicles and advanced technology in the Bible. I wanted to, of course, keep it real and keep it religious for this evening's topic. So we're going to dip into the paranormal in the religious realm. It was funny, I was joking around. We were originally live on the air here in Minneapolis on a radio station, AM 1470, and then they were bought out by a gospel radio station, and we were told we were no longer welcome on their channel. There was no room at the inn for Darkness on the Edge of Town because there was no paranormal activity. I said, boy, have you read the Bible? You got people coming back from the dead. You got ghosts. You got UFOs. somehow they just didn't see the same interest we did in the paranormal. No. So, but worked out okay. We've got a much bigger global audience doing it this way and streaming it over the internet. We want to thank all of you guys for tuning in. And remember, you can join us live in our chat room during the show, darknessradio.com. Click on the Listen tab, and there you can get a live link to go into our chat room and talk with other like-minded individuals that are there to share their ideas on the paranormal. It's free, it's easy, and fun. And just join in for the live chat and talk with other people. It's going on right now. For those of you that are listening to the archives of the show, this should go without saying, it's probably not live going on right now talking about the show you're listening to. I only say that, Tim. People actually send me emails going, I went into the chat room, I was listening to it the next day at work, and there was nobody in there talking about the show.
Funny.
Yeah, interesting. But we're talking tonight about the Bible connections with the paranormal and UFO with our guest Patrick Cook, and let's get back into it. Mr. Cook, tell us a little bit more. What did you find to be some of the most fascinating research that you did about, you know, I mean, I joked around saying there's people coming back from the dead, there's, you know, spontaneous healings, there's people pulling loaves and fishes out of nowhere. You know, this is all paranormal activity in the real world to us, right? I mean, how much more of this kind of stuff is floating around in the Bible that we're not even aware of?
Well, in response to the statement you made when you were when we came back from the break, one thing that I'd like to point out, and the very reason that I wrote this article, The Bible and the Paranormal, A New Perspective, is because of the fact that I, in my research, I have found that in truth, the people that subscribe to the concept that there's a little bit more than just what we see in the world, the people that believe in the paranormal, have a tendency and are much closer than the concepts that we find in the Bible than those that actually proclaim it as their foundation in their religion. Let me just read a list here real quick. Ghosts, witches and wizards, sorcery, enchantment and divination, evil and unclean spirits, conjuring up the dead, trances, astrology, and oracles, superhuman strength, giants, dragons, and unicorns are, and I'm sure if you think, as I was reading that list, in relationship to the Bible, you can see how that's a common thing that most people know are in the Bible. That alone should show you that there's something very strange going on above and beyond what would be considered as normal. Some of the lesser-known anomalies that you find in Scripture are levitation, astral projection, clairvoyance, psychokinesis, telepathy, metamorphosis, glossalia, behemoth satyrs, cockatrices, flying fiery serpents, and gigantic and terrifying fire-breathing, smoke-snorting, stone-hearted, indestructible, amphibious sea monsters.
Well, I know those still exist. I divorced two of those, Patrick.
But all of those things exist.
Right.
The point that we're making here, the research that we're presenting, is intended to provide evidence that not all of these paranormal anomalies are properly understood, and that many are completely misrepresented by the church, and actually in mainstream thought as well. There's been a gulf between the church portrayal of these seemingly unnatural things and the beliefs about many others outside of the paranormal in other areas that are completely controlled by a dogmatic interpretation of everything that the Christian is taught. And then, of course, the Christian relates what they're taught to the outside world what happens is people believe that they believe that that's actually the way the Bible portrays it, which it is not. Therefore, the myth that the church has created around these things actually projects itself into the rest of the world and turns everybody off to the concept that the Bible is just about this evil God that goes around smashing things up. And so that's why I wrote this article, to show people that there's something in there that's a lot different than you think. And also, within families, it's absolutely amazing. Within families, you'll have, you know, there's always Uncle Jim over there with these strange stories about UFOs and Bigfoot, right, and the whole nine yards. And he's always considered the nut and the kook, while these other people are saying, well, you know, there's a possibility, you know, and people are actually considered just possessed by Satan if they even talk about things like this. When in truth, it's as common, the Bible is full of the paranormal. from front to back. There's no question about it.
Do you suppose that the reason the church has turned the Bible into dogma and not addressed these other issues that are paranormal has everything to do with getting it to be more believable for the general populace? Or are they doing it to perhaps not seem as crazy as Uncle Bob in the corner talking about Bigfoot?
Well, I don't know. When you consider some of the strange things that go on in the church, I would think that they would be considered as the strange uncle in the corner. But, you know, the whole concept, everything on my website, and I've written a book called The Doctrines of Men, A Terrible Truth. If you look, let me backtrack here just a bit.
Sure.
When I first started presenting the concept that UFOs and the Bible were connected, I instantly started getting the constant response. Well, if this were true, if there were UFOs in the Bible and there was some connection between God and UFOs, certainly the church would have told us about it. So what I did was, I knew about the certain things, like, as for instance, one thing that we'll discuss is the concept of Easter, and I knew that all these things, Easter, Christmas, Halloween, all Saints Day and all of these things had a pagan origin, so I started checking the other doctrines and see how much biblical foundation they had. And I found that, in fact, it's a very broad statement, but I believe that most of the doctrines and practices, in fact, all of the doctrines and practices of the Christian Church have no foundation in the Bible, but were created by the Emperor Constantine in the 4th century A.D. in a whole different church, and when we to create a whole different concept of what quote-unquote Christianity should be, and rejected all the previous beliefs of the generations that had come before. So for them to ignore the paranormal, they just basically the church looks as they describe certain things like the Leviathan is an elephant, Behemoth is an elephant, Leviathan is a hippo, all kinds of strange different things that they come up with. But they can't explain away certain things which are very clear in the Bible. Now, if you talk about levitation or psychokinesis or anything to that effect within a church community, you're going to get they're going to look at you very strange, and they're going to, that's considered satanic power in the whole nine yards.
Right.
But there are two events in Scripture that will change that, that can change that perception completely. Now, let me go into this first one to show you. Now, this is a perfect instance of levitation. Jesus was being followed around by a number of believers because he could heal them and he could feed them and things like that. And poverty was very much in existence in the time when he was walking the land around Judea. And so they were following him, and finally he healed all the people that were with this large group that was following him. And he had been taken away into he wanted to go to a private place, and the crowds followed him. So he told his apostles, they took him there by ship, and they told his apostles to wait for him. And they were off the shore after all these people had left. And then what we see, let me just read the verse here. This is from Matthew the 14th chapter. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up to a mountain to pray. And when evening was come, he was there alone. But the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, which is about midnight, Jesus went unto them walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him on the sea, they were troubled. Now, I want you to think about this. Walking on land is easy enough to do.
Right.
But walking on water, what you're doing is you're literally defying gravity.
Sure.
Defying gravity is defined as what, if a human can do it? Levitation.
Right.
There's no question about it. This proves that he is levitating right there in the beginning of it. But what's amazing about this, when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a spirit," and they cried out for fear. But straightway Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid." And Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it be you, bid me to come to you on the water." So Peter is standing there challenging Jesus, saying, okay, if it's really you, let me walk out to you. And he said, come. And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. And when he saw the wind boisterous, in other words, Peter's actually walking on the water himself, apparently the storm kicked up real bad, he was afraid and began to sink, saying, and he cried, saying, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him and said unto him, O you of little faith, wherefore did you doubt? Now think about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's Jesus walking on the water. It's Peter walking on the water. A human being, you know, you can say Jesus is, you know, part God, part man. But Peter's just a man. And he's walking out there to meet him. Well, suddenly he got scared, and as soon as he got scared, he started sinking.
Right.
So that, but the important thing is that Jesus told him, he said, that he didn't have enough faith. Now, faith is evidence, is actually defined as evidence in the Greek. When you see that word, is evidence. It's persuasion. It's the way you're persuaded by the evidence that you've been exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another thing happened that was very interesting. Let me get down to that real quick. What happened was some of his disciples tried to cast out a demon. And then, they failed at doing it. And then and this is from Matthew 17. Then the disciples came to Jesus' part and said, why could not we cast him out? And Jesus said unto them, because of your unbelief, verily I say unto you, if you have the faith of a grain of mustard seed, and I'm in the nursery business, and I know that mustard seeds are very tiny, you shall say unto this mountain, remove hence to yonder place, and it shall remove. In other words, he said, you can, and in other places, you say to that mountain over there, you get over there. If what he is saying to human beings is that they have the power of psychokinesis so strong that if they even have the tiniest belief that they can do it, they can move a mountain from one place to the other. That is evidence that Jesus is saying clearly that human beings have the power of psychokinesis. Is that not correct?
Sure, but now isn't it also said, though, a lot of the stories and the parables that Jesus told like this were simply manifestations or just that, parables that were just like a life learning lesson. It didn't necessarily mean that verbatim you had the ability to move mountains. It meant that with belief and with understanding you can do impossible things, or you could make the impossible, you know, become possible. Not necessarily meaning that you could lift up with your mind an entire mountain, but meaning that if you believe in yourself and you do what, you know, what's right, you can do the things that everybody else, you know, takes for granted.
Right. Well, first you have to consider that in context, this was not in the context of a parable.
Okay.
And he's speaking to them directly. And the most important thing is, I didn't finish that verse. The end of that verse says, and nothing shall be impossible unto you. So basically what he's saying is that, and I agree to a certain degree about your comment.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that what it is that what he's saying is that mankind has the inherent ability to do these things, but they just don't know or don't believe that they can do them. And that's one of so all these other, what I'm saying is that believing that all these other things, he made it clear that a human being has that power, and he is speaking to human beings, and he's not speaking in a parable. He's telling them that the reason that you failed in casting out that demon is because you didn't believe that you could do it. That's exactly what he's saying in here. So what I'm saying is that when you take the broad range of human abilities, well, you know, we have to look at it from a logical standpoint. If Joe over here can do it, and he's just a human, if Joe over here can start fires just by thinking about it, if this man over here can float in the air, like 13 of the Catholic saints can do, and as a matter of fact, you remember the story of the Flying Nun?
Right.
That was taken from, that was about a sister whose levitative abilities were so strong. Now get this, this is an amazing story. Her levitation abilities were so strong that when she went to major council, she was in a major council at one time, and she began floating. She was so excited, she began floating off her chair. So they tied her to the chair. This is in Catholic. This is in the Catholic Encyclopedia. They tied her to the chair. And the chair and her both floated up, so they had to nail the chair to the floor.
Holy cow.
This is a Catholic saint. And the role that Sally Fields played was of that nun. She was about that nun. She was so proficient at levitation that they sainted her. There are 13 other saints that have levitation. And a great number of the saints in the Catholic Church have exhibited paranormal abilities.
You know what I'm curious about, and boy, am I about to open myself up for a Christianity backlash here, but something that I find is interesting is that all of the oh, Tim's giving me the look. Do we need to take a quick break? We'll bring this up when we come back. All right. I'm going to throw this out just before we go to break, and then we'll finish up about it. I'm kind of confused because so many of the things we're warned about that are signs of Satan, I see that Jesus Christ did. And how do we know he's not a deceiver as well? We'll talk more about that when we come back.
I am Greenblock 6, and when I am in your galaxy, I listen to Dave and Tim on the darkness on the edge of town.
Bigfoot, Nessie, Ogopogo, Yeti, Chupacabra. Please stop calling these guys names. Dave and Tim have feelings, you know.
Back to the lock with ye, Nessie.
Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town.
All right, I can sense the emails are lining up already, Tim, right? We've just thrown out the gauntlet that maybe Jesus was a deceiver. If you read the book, again, I'm just talking about the Bible itself, and we'll go back to our guest here, Patrick Cook. You know, the Bible, which has always confused me, is in one word, you just said that, you know, we have the ability to cast out the demon if you have the faith and the belief. Yet I know demonologists and exorcists that tell me that they have to go in humbled to do this work, because if they let vanity get control of them, then they can't cast out demons. Well, why is vanity even playing the role? I've been told by my Lord in the book, in the Bible, his word was, you have the authority under me to cast out demons by proclaiming my name. Something similar to that, correct? If I'm given this ability and I do this ability and I'm casting demons out and I'm dealing with the healings and I'm dealing with levitation, I'm dealing with these things, as long as I'm giving praise to the person who's given me this power, and I'm not saying, like, Tim's possessed here sitting across from me and I say, Tim, in the holy name of Dave Schrader, demon be gone, then you're taking it upon yourself for the arrogance. So I can understand that being sin, but the whole, you know, if I'm doing these things in the vein of what the Bible tells us, we should be good to go. The question I ask about the whole deception is, nothing is ever clear. No, it's all open to interpretation, the Bible, and I think that's what the biggest problem has been with people that are not, you know, into the religious aspect. And we've proven, I mean, there's been so many different translations of simple words in the Bible. Like you said, Leviathan, well now we mean whale, or we mean hippo. Well, that's not what the original intent was, but we're twisting it into what the church wants us to believe. How do we know that the things that he was saying we had the ability to do? Now, that's the same stuff that we're told that if we have those abilities, it's not of God, it's of the devil, or it's of evil. I'm confused by where all that comes in.
You're asking me that.
Yeah, I'm just curious what your take is on it, on the different religious aspects that you look at. And certainly I'm not trying to call out Jesus here, but I'm just wondering why is it that, and Jesus, if you're listening, go ahead and give us a call, and we'll talk to you as well. But, if in the Bible, we're told speaking to the dead is a sin, but yet they were allowed to speak to the dead, if abilities like when we think of exorcisms and demonic possession, some of the main things are levitation, right? Speaking foreign tongues, speaking in languages that are long dead languages, things like this. Yet that's crazy in the Bible. People are floating. You just mentioned 13 saints could float. Why does that make them holy? But to me, if I start floating in my chair, I got priests throwing holy water at me and hit me in the forehead with a crucifix.
Well, that's the way they look at it. You see, therein lies the deception. That's the perfect example. This is what I'm trying to present.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that these things are attributed to Satan and attributed to evil, and in fact, that is not the case. You say that it's in the Bible that tells you don't conjure up the dead, don't contact the dead. Yet, we see see it actually happening in the Bible. Actually, the classic example, the woman that was called the Witch of Endor, bringing up Saul's, I believe it was Saul's soul, but it was actually done with the permission of the king of Israel. But that's one of the problems that we have, that Satan is considered to be this evil individual that has all these strange powers in the whole nine yards, and you don't see Satan is very seldom ever spoken of in the Bible. He's not a major character in the Bible, and usually when he appears, he screws up whatever he tries to do. But attributing all of these powers to Satan, and when we see here, you can say, well, is Jesus deceiving us? Well, that's just sort of you know, it's a way of looking at it, but that's not what you see happening. He's saying that he has this power. Of course, now the important thing you have to consider that this power is not, it's inherent in humans, but it is not a power of humans. Jesus himself said he got all his power from his Father, that it all comes from the source, from the essence of God. And of course, humility is absolutely important in the Bible. Jesus emphasized that over and over again. He said, "Except you become as a little child, completely dependent on God, and understanding." You see, it's a matter of where you consider the source of the power that you have. If you consider that, well, it's just me as an individual, that's true. But if you consider yourself as part of a greater whole, and you're getting that power from a higher source, or from the entire source of humanity, that's another way to approach it. In other words, instead of thinking it as coming from within, it
right.
comes from
out. That's what I was saying. If I was standing here going, okay, I've read the Bible, so now I can say demons be gone in the name of Dave Schrader, that's where the vanity comes into play. But if I'm saying demons be gone in the name of Jesus Christ or whatever, and I'm giving the accolades and understanding that the power is not from within me, but I'm nothing but a conduit or a way for it to come out.
Exactly.
Right, that's where it is.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Going through the Bible and doing this, talk about some of these other deals. Now, there are giants mentioned in this. And, you know, now, again, what did this mean to us, giants? You know, I mean, as we're looking, back then we know people were on average, 5 feet tall. So does that make a 7 foot person that we now see as pretty normal out here, 6 foot 8, 6 foot 9, 7 foot, does that make them a giant?
Well, no, the giants that are spoken of in the Bible, there's quite a bit of confusion about the giants themselves. The only thing that we have, now giants are spoken of in the Bible, but the way it starts, the beginning, the very first story about giants, comes from Genesis 6:4, where it says that basically the concept is that angels, not fallen angels as in the concept, but angels that were here on the planet, obviously, lusted after women, and they took all of them which they choose. They saw that they were fair, took all of them which they choose.
Right.
And then the only thing that we said that beyond that, it says, and there were giants on the earth in those days. Well, it's a very, and then we hear about, of course, everybody knows about Goliath.
Right.
There's King Og, which was, he had to be at least 13 to 14 feet tall because of the description of his bed, the dimensions are actually given. And then there's a very good possibility that if you look at it in the broad range, I have an entire section on giants in the Bible on the website. There's a very strong possibility that most of the battles that the Hebrews were having, they were having with giants. And as a matter of fact, the Canaanites, when they went into Canaan, which was the land of milk and honey that God had promised them and took them to that land of Canaan, was filled with giants. And it actually says, there's actually a description of the advanced scouts that went into Canaan for the nation of Israel. They came back and they said, "We are in their sight as grasshoppers. They are so tall." And there are descriptions throughout the Bible of the Anakin, there's about 13 separate major tribes that are spoken of in the Bible that are considered as giants. There are places called the Valley of the Giants, the Land of the Giants. Giants play a very important role. So apparently, but anyway, getting back to the original story, what happened is the way these giants came into existence is very unclear in the Bible itself. But the Book of Enoch, which is actually quoted in the Bible, but was not included in the original Bible that was put together by Eusebius,
right,
in the 4th century A.D., the Book of Enoch was very much read by the Jews and by the Christians themselves. And Enoch goes into a much more detailed description about what happened. So what he says, I'll bring it out very quickly, he says that these angels formed a conspiracy to do this. There were about 200 of them. They formed a conspiracy to mate with women. Somehow or another, we don't know what the purpose was, what their reasoning was behind doing it, but they did it, and they created a hybrid race of giants. Now, these giants grew very rapidly. They ate their parents out of, and I'm just paraphrasing what Enoch says actually happened. I've got these verses about how this happened on the website itself, so anybody can follow it if they look into my section on giants. They ate the families out of house and home. Then they left, and they went out, and they ate everything in the forest. And then they came back and started eating the people that had raised them. And then when they ran out of more food, they began eating each other. It became a cannibalistic thing. And then suddenly this came to the attention of God, which is another concept altogether. And he decided that he would flood the earth to rid the planet of these giants. But apparently, some of the genetic mutations lived on beyond that, and there were still giants after the flood. But the original hybrids themselves were killed during the flood. Now, what's interesting about this is that Enoch goes on to say that the bodies of the giants died, but the spirits of the giants lived on, and those spirits are the demons that you're talking about that exorcists remove from people. So,
okay,
and so that's where the concept of the Nephilim and the fog, those beings were called Nephil. The word Nephilim is not in the Bible, but the word Nephil is in the Hebrew. And that word Nephil is actually describing the giants themselves, which supposedly are no longer with us. The angels that committed the crime are in prison, in a desert prison called Duadel. We don't know whether it's on this planet or on another planet, but they're definitely in a prison until the end times, the Bible says. So the only remnants we have of those are the skeletons of those giants that seem to be popping up everywhere. And the demons that survived the flood themselves, and those are the ones, and Enoch describes those demons as going out and tormenting people because of the fact that they were born and they weren't able to survive. So, an interesting concept is exorcism is a very dangerous practice. If you know any long-time survivors, you need to question how good they are at what they do. The average life of a Jesuit or exorcist, once he enters into the profession, is a year and a half.
Yikes.
Yes.
All right, well, we've got to take our last break here for the top of the hour, and then we're going to come back. We'll continue talking about this. We'll talk about UFOs in the Bible and more references. Our guest is Patrick Cook, and for more information, you can check out his website at BibleUFO.com. It's a great list of different articles there that you can check and examine. I recommend that you do. Amazing stuff. We're going to be back with more here on this Easter evening. Thank you very much for tuning in. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show with your hosts, Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis.
She's been thinking about this sleepover all week, but I think about her food allergies all the time. Fortunately, her doctor prescribes Olaire, omalizumab. It's proven to significantly reduce allergic reactions if a food allergy accident happens.
Xolair 150 milligrams is a prescription medication used to treat food allergy in people 1 year of age and older to reduce allergic reactions due to accidental exposure to one or more foods. While taking Xolair, you should continue to avoid all foods to which you are allergic. Don't use if you are allergic to Xolair. Xolair may cause a severe, life-threatening allergic reaction called anaphylaxis. Tell your doctor if you ever had anaphylaxis. Get help right away if you have trouble breathing or if you have swelling of your throat or tongue. Xolair should not be used for the emergency treatment of allergic reactions, including anaphylaxis. Xolair is for maintenance use to reduce allergic reactions, including anaphylaxis, while avoiding food allergens. Serious side effects such as cancer, fever, muscle aches and rash, parasitic infection, or heart and circulation problems have been reported. Please see Xolair.com for full prescribing information. Ask an allergist about Xolair. This is an advertisement for Xolair paid for by Genentech and Novartis.
Delta Airlines just turned 100 and is already shaping the next century of flight with the Delta Sustainable Skies Lab. Here, they're building the future of flight. Think electric air taxis and next-gen aircraft aiming to cut fuel burn significantly. And this isn't just future talk. Today, their fleet of Boeing 737s have marine-like finlets designed to reshape airflow that reduces drag. The future of travel is more sustainable, and Delta's leading the way. Learn more at delta.com/sustainability.
Love the night? Reach for Zen After Dark, a limited cocktail-inspired series for those who get up when the sun goes down. Try Zen's Mojito, Spiced Cider, and Espresso Martini nicotine pouches. Find them at select retailers, available while supplies last. Zen After Dark. Bring on the night. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.